From WXXI News, I'm Megan Mack, and this is Connections. Our connection this hour was made on the island of Themyscira, a lush paradise that's home to the Amazons. Life is peaceful on the island for Amazon women until a plane crashes off the coast and an Amazonian princess dives into the water to save the pilot. The arrival of this man, a spy for the British Army during the First World War, changes the course of the princess's life. She embarks on a journey to end the war and save the world. And spoiler alert, it goes pretty well since she's actually the daughter of Zeus. If you haven't guessed, we're talking about the Wonder Woman film, which opened in theaters on June 2nd. The film has brought in more than $600 million worldwide, and with it, a slew of controversy. Some are celebrating the newest film in the DC universe. It's the first time a female superhero has dominated the big screen in about 12 years. But others say the character isn't enough of a feminist, and Diana Prince's sex appeal conforms to the patriarchal standards of beauty. There are even think pieces about her lack of armpit hair. Rich Lowry for the National Review wrote, quote, "Can't an Amazonian superhero wield the lasso of truth and bullet deflecting bracelets while wearing an armored up version of a figure skating outfit without inciting more battles in the culture war?" This being contemporary America, the answer is of course not. So this hour, we'll talk about those competing perspectives, and we'll also explore the role of feminism on stage and on screen. And as an aside, if you haven't seen Wonder Woman, we'll warn you about possible spoilers so you can save those surprises for yourselves. I'd like to welcome my guest for the hour. Abby DeVeist is a local librarian, comedian, and actor. Abby, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Michelle Finn is the deputy historian for the city of Rochester. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for inviting me.
And you also wrote your dissertation. Part of it was about Wonder Woman,
yes,
correct?
One of the chapters in my dissertation, which was on feminism and pop culture between 1920 and 1948. So Wonder Woman was a chapter in there.
Great. We have a Wonder Woman scholar, so listeners, call in and ask your Wonder Woman questions. Jackie McGriff is the administrative assistant for development at WXXI and also a self-described film nut. Jackie, thanks for coming downstairs.
Thank you for having me. And I was totally expecting the Connections theme and not the Wonder Woman theme, so I was like sitting here jamming to the theme, so that was nice.
I love it. Adam Lubiteau is a film critic for City Newspaper. Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for allowing me to be here.
You're the sole male guest, so...
It's a lot of pressure, but I've got my Wonder Woman underoos on, so I'm prepared.
And on the line with us for the first half hour is Sadie Fisher, a queer Latina activist and diversity consultant and aspiring Wonder Woman. Hi, Sadie.
Hi. Happy to be on the show, Megan.
Thanks for calling in. Now, listeners, we would like to hear from you as well. I know there's a lot to say about this film, so if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And I'm also on Twitter at mmacmedia. So let's kick off this conversation with just some first impressions of the film. I know not everyone has seen it, but those of you who have, Sadie, Adam, Abby, jump in. What was your first thought after seeing the film? Abby, we'll start with you.
Well, I was much more impressed with it than any other DC movie that I have seen recently. I thought that they did a really good job making the female superhero have a lot of power, which I was a little worried about. So I was quite impressed with it when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the power, do you mean just the battle scenes or internal?
Both. Like, not just the sexual power that, you know, you get to see a lot with females in movies, like these feminine wiles. She was, like, intelligent and strong, and stronger than most every person in the movie with her. And she was unapologetic for it, and I thought that was great.
You remind me of one of the early scenes where she's a child and she's training, and her aunt, she's pushing her, and she kept saying, "You're stronger than this, you're stronger than this." Mm-hmm. And I think that was carried throughout the film. Her strength, both internally and physically, grew. Is that something that you caught on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, it was also not just her strength physically, but, like, her strength of character. She was always very kind, even when she was, like, running around and trying to get away from all of the people who are trying to watch her and keep her safe. She was positive and just really inclusive, I guess, which I liked. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool.
Sadie, what were your impressions? Have you seen it twice?
I've seen it once.
You've seen it once, but you went wearing your Wonder Woman gear.
I sure did. So I absolutely loved it. And I mean, in part, I've always just had this love for Wonder Woman since I can remember. And And for me, it was always about representation. I know growing up, I was always told what I could and couldn't do because I was a girl, or, you know, told, you know, girls don't do that, or sit like this, or why can't you act like a lady, and just those types of messaging. And I think for me, what always stood out about Wonder Woman is that she didn't have, or we didn't have, those types of gender expectations of her. And that was always important for me, to see a strong female character that no one was in, probably not on her island. Her mom wasn't telling her what she could and couldn't do because she was a girl. And so I definitely loved seeing that in the film, right? That she was really standing up against many of those gender stereotypes. I agree with what Abby said around, like, the power, and that she was strong and made her own rules. And so that, I love that about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you would have changed, Sadie, if you were the director? Is there anything that you think could have been stronger?
So I've heard various debates about her appearance, and as far as the, I guess her giving into kind of the more conventional, I guess, beliefs around what it means to be beautiful. And I have conflicting kind of thoughts around that. I mean, a part of me agrees, and yes, absolutely, you know, did she still looks like what we would expect a quote-unquote beautiful woman to look like, right? And then for that to be part of her appeal, and for some people maybe, and to consider that representation sexy and beautiful. And yet at the same time, I also think that it's important that, why can a woman who maybe appears more feminine, why don't we automatically affiliate her with strength and with power? You know, is masculinity the only thing that we affiliate with power? So the fact that she is feminine, there's some strength in that too. For a woman myself who isn't particularly, you know, masculine appearing, oftentimes people make assumptions about what that means about my own strength. And so there is some power in the fact that maybe she didn't give in to anyone's full stereotypes of how she appeared in the film.
I think you raised a lot of interesting points, and we'll definitely talk more about her appearance as the hour goes on. But let's ask the only gentleman in the room what he thought.
No pressure.
Of the film. Go ahead, Adam.
I would echo what Abby and Sadie said. You know, I really enjoyed the film. I had, you know, minor quibbles, like storytelling-wise or stylistically, but the things they got right, and specifically about the character, I thought it did really well. It got that, you know, the idealism you want from Wonder Woman and the strength that we talked about. And I think a lot of that was the direction. And Gal Gadot, the actress who plays Wonder Woman, I thought, you know, she was kind of perfect casting.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's nodding. Well, those who've seen the film.
Yeah. Haven't seen it.
Oh, go ahead. But jump in, Michelle.
Isn't she Israeli?
Yes.
So that sort of puts a bit of a twist on the traditional white Euro woman.
Definitely. And they talked a lot about her uniform not being stars and stripes like it was in the comic books, and I kind of appreciated that too. Especially in the concept of the war and it being British and German and all that kind of stuff. I appreciated that it was everyone's Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm.
Do you think any of this controversy is warranted? It's not feminist enough. Why doesn't she have armpit hair? Some of these things we're hearing, you know, could she have been a stronger female character? Abby, what do you think?
Well, for me, I think a lot of the complaints that are being have are based on mythology. Like the Amazon women are like perfect beings that were created, you know, that kind of stuff. Maybe they just don't have armpit hair. Who knows?
Well, going back to 1941, and Michelle, let me jump in here, the character was created in a certain way.
Right.
Perhaps the film is being true to that.
Perhaps, yeah. And it is problematic. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to read a character, and different people will obviously take from her based on their own perspective that they're bringing to it. Originally, that was an issue as well. It's always been a debate with Wonder Woman, her body and how much of it she's revealing, whether or not this is a skimpy costume. Marston, who created Wonder Woman, he was a Harvard-trained psychologist. His name was William Moulton Marston, and he insisted that, you know, she was athletic, that this was a powerful body. She's tall, and she's an Amazon, and that her costume was practical and allowed her to kind of have this physical mobility that every good action hero needs to have. But at the same time, she's very much conforming to traditional standards of beauty for women, and I was mentioning earlier, there's a particular frame from one of the early comics where there two men are like measuring her and kind of assessing her body and reporting, you know, look, she has the perfect modern Venus measurements. So in a lot of ways, it's fraught. There's in a lot of ways you can take positive, empowering messages from it. And then in other ways, there's stuff to be desired still.
Mm-hmm. While we're on the subject of Marston, Wonder Woman's creator, he had other ideas behind the character. Michelle, if you can just, or anyone, paint it. This is not something I knew. This is something I read last night, and I was pretty surprised. So if any of you would like to jump in and talk about them, what he was thinking.
So there's a lot going on, and I'm assuming you're alluding to the domestic
yes.
situation. So he had a wife and mistress, if that's the term, and they all lived together in the same household. He had children with both women. Even after his death in 47, the women continued to live together and raise the family as a unit. So very non-traditional household. Again, can be interpreted in different ways. But I think in his mind, and this is really what I focused on. So, you know, there's on the one hand, how you might interpret the character and how you might interpret her creator and what he chooses to do with his private life. On the other hand, there's what he thought he was accomplishing. And he very much thought women should rule the world. And he very much put Wonder Woman out there. The quote I have is that, frankly, Wonder Woman is psychological propaganda for the new type of woman who should, I believe, rule the world. And this is an idea that he had before he even ventured into comic books. It was an idea that was prevalent in his college lectures at Harvard and the different schools he's taught at, and that he really, based on his research in kind of people's reactions to social stimulation, he felt that women were driven by love and men were driven by appetite, and that of the two, love was a more powerful and preferable impulse that would lead to a better life for everybody, a better world. So that's what he wanted to bring about.
I also read that he believed that women were superior to men, but that they could only realize that by giving into submission, and that's why we saw some of the bondage mm-hmm. imagery in the comics.
Absolutely, yeah. Bondage was a big theme for him, as most people have picked up on. Pretty much every episode, she's being tied up, chained, roped, hogtied, whatever. And again, can be problematic. But he insisted, and this is sort of using this imagery that actually came out of the suffrage movement of women sort of breaking free from their chains that are binding them. Mm. So this is the imagery that he's drawing from. And he's saying, no, this is to show that they're being chained in order to show them breaking out of it. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, she's also binding others with her lasso. And so that's always good binding. When she binds people, it's to get them to tell the truth and do the right thing. So yeah, that sort of theme of being bound to love and loving authority was sort of where he was coming from.
But not everyone was happy with that. So
no.
There was a little outrage. The character went through a kind of transformation. And then in the 70s, Gloria Steinem put her on the cover of Ms. Magazine, and she became the feminist icon that a lot of people identify with. Jackie, growing up, were you a Wonder Woman fan?
I actually was not paying attention to Wonder Woman. It was other female characters in other movies that I really looked up to. And it wasn't just like it wasn't superhero movies, because I was always into. I never read the comic books or anything. I always watched film or watched cartoons or played the video games. And so, like, when I was growing up, for me, the characters that I was looking more towards were people like, Princess Leia from Star Wars, or Ripley from Alien, or even Dottie Henson from A League of Their Own. Because, I mean, these are all, because I was playing co-ed it was like T-ball at the time. And so I really loved A League of Their Own, and I wanted to be Dottie Hanson. And so, like, these characters were the people I was like, even like Jasmine from Aladdin, when she's talking about she's not a prize to be won, I was like, yes. So it was those female characters really for me that I looked up to. So, like, when Wonder Woman came out, I was hurt, or even when I heard they had made the announcement that there was a Wonder Woman movie coming out, well, number one, because I'm both a DC and Marvel fan, but seeing as how, like, everyone's kind of been down on DC lately, I was finally like, yeah, we get a female character before we get Captain Marvel, awesome. But anyway, that's another conversation entirely, but but yeah, those were the female characters I was looking toward to when I was younger, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Walking out of the film yesterday, I saw it with four people in the whole theater. It was great, and three of them were little girls. And as they were walking out, the three of them paused in front of the photo of Wonder Woman with their arms crossed. Oh. So it was very cute. So
that gives me goosebumps.
That's cool. That's yeah. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing the phone starting to ring, so we want to make sure we get some of your calls in this hour. First up is Sharon in North Chilai. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I am so excited to hear about Wonder Woman being so widespread and admired. I remember as a little girl, I'm 77, so when I was younger and about the age of about 6 or 7, we had fields behind us, and the girl up the street and myself were the Wonder Woman of the neighborhood. and it was always, we made up these wonderful ideas, and she was very powerful to us, and it wasn't, of course, we were too young to have it sexual or anything, but, I mean, that came later, but it was exciting to have a woman that, as a little girl, you could look up to and say, oh, now she's powerful. She can do all these wonderful things. I mean, she was a good leader in her community. She had all these wonderful attributes that you said, yes, I want to be Wonder Woman, and that's what we aimed to be at the age of about 6. So maybe we were a little older, I don't know, but I know it was very, very young. And I'm so excited to listen to all the views from people that are younger than I am and what she brought to them.
So, Sharon, have you seen the film?
I haven't. I haven't. It's on my list.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I know. It's we've had out-of-town people around, so I haven't had a chance to go see it, but I'm planning on it probably this weekend.
Excellent. Oh, very good. Thanks so much for calling in, Sharon. So being inspired as a kid, I know, Jackie, you're a different icon. Sadie, how about you? Were you a Wonder Woman fan as a child?
I can't say I was a Wonder Woman fan when I was really little, but I think Wonder Woman really kind of entered my life when I went in off to school and went to college. But I think a lot of that was, too, as I was growing up, thinking about what I wanted to do, and I always wanted to make a difference in the world, and Wonder Woman represented that to me. It was, you know, using your powers to do good, and that's what she represents, is someone who is, you know, has this strength and, you know, and is also this goddess and has these powers, and she uses them actually to help others, right, and in order to make a difference. And so I think that was always really powerful for me, and the fact that, you know, she was also unapologetically who she is was another huge strength. And as also I think about as a mother of three boys, my oldest is 16, and when I had him, I knew I wasn't going to raise him with any kind of gender expectations. I always told him, you know, like what you like because you like it, and do what you do because you like it. And I think Wonder Woman represented that for me as I got older, is just this character that was out there and didn't succumb to all these other, at least not all the gender expectations that were out there, and was out there fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there was an effort in the story itself I felt it was a little My Fair Lady-ish. So for those of you that have seen it, when she gets to London, they're trying to dress her in different clothes.
It's a dressing montage.
Yes, she tried on more than 200 outfits at one point.
That's actually true to the original comic book, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the first thing she does when she gets to America. In that case, she goes shopping.
Go ahead, Adam.
I did love that sort of her litmus test for what she wanted to wear was how do you kick in this?
Oh, yes.
Like, she ripped the skirt a couple times. Yeah. I was like, that's why she wears a skimpy outfit.
Exactly.
But do you think the character Steve Trevor, the British spy, was sort of a Henry Higgins in a way. You know, here's what you need to do to fit in here. Is that meant to make us think, or am I drawing conclusions from something that I really shouldn't be thinking that much about?
Well, I think that was his purpose in the movie, but I also think they went out of their way to just shut him down all the time. Mm-hmm. Like when she goes into the courtroom and it's all these men like, hub, 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 hub. And he's like, you can't come in here. And she's just like, whatevs, and walks right in and everyone gets silent. Mm. It's like, you can put these rules on me and I'm going to push through them, mm-hmm. and I don't care.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we actually have a clip of that piece of the film that we can play. So let's have one of you paint a picture, please. Adam, tell us just what happened in that room.
Oh, gosh.
Team effort.
Yeah, Sue Trevor is a
building. Yep.
Yeah, is a spy, and they're sort of planning out the war effort, mm-hmm. and strategy, and it's sort of the closed door meeting that she sort of busts in on.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think they had decided on an armistice, and she was upset about that. So this is what happens right after she sort of gets kicked out of the room.
Please slow down, Diana.
That's your leader? How could he say that? Believe that? Was your duty to simply give them a book?
No.
You didn't stand your ground. You didn't fight.
Because there was no chance of changing his mind.
This is Ares, and he's not going to allow a negotiation or a surrender. The millions of people you talked about, they will die.
We are going anyway.
You mean you were lying?
I'm a spy. That's what I do.
How do I know you're not lying to me right now?
I am taking you to the front. We are probably going to die. This is a terrible idea.
So in that last bit, he's putting the lasso of truth around himself to prove to her that he's not lying. It's pretty funny. There's some funny moments in this film.
Definitely.
But how do you all feel about that? Sadie, was that an empowering moment for you to watch? Were her true characters really shining through? Or did you think that, you know, is she still being dominated by men in that clip?
Well, for me, that particular scene, I actually really loved that she went in regardless, and she was... The fact that she's so angry and so passionate about the fact that she felt he wasn't going to do the right thing was really kind of a powerful piece in that as well, that she wasn't going to be silenced, and whether he was going to speak up, she felt the need that she needed to speak up. Because so often, I think any time we think differently from others, people, they try to get us to conform. They try to get us to silence us, right, and to do something in some ways to make us feel like our voices shouldn't be heard. And I think that scene shows that she doesn't quite get why he wouldn't speak up and why he wouldn't say what he believed in and why he wouldn't fight for what she believed and what she thought he would believe was right. So I think that shows, again, her positioning on she hasn't been, I guess, they haven't changed her yet, right? She still mm-hmm. has that power and that fire and refuses to conform.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the new Wonder Woman film, which opened in theaters on June 2nd and has generated a lot of controversy. And our panelists are sharing their thoughts on a lot of topics this hour: her physicality, her sex appeal, her moral compass. And we'll talk more about that in our second hour, but we'll also expand this conversation to talk about the role of women on stage and on screen in general. So I know, Sadie, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. Sadie Fisher, you're welcome. A queer Latina activist and diversity consultant and aspiring Wonder Woman. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you.
Sure. Listeners, again, you can join this conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'll take the shortest break in radio and more connections next. Coming up in our second hour, how music can be a catalyst for social change. We're talking to Bethany Yarrow. She's the daughter of Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Bethany is in town for a performance in the Finger Lakes tomorrow, but first, she's our guest on Connections to talk about her music and her activism. Her partner is cellist Rufus Cappadocia, who was in studio a few months ago. We'll talk to Bethany about how they work together to convey important messages through music.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Nixon Peabody, a full-service law firm with Rochester roots and global reach committed to helping Rochester's business community navigate complex issues in an ever-changing legal landscape. More about the firm online at nixonpeabody.com.
Comedian Kumail Nanjiani and writer Emily Gordon's new movie is based on their real-life relationship. At the heart of it, the tension between his Pakistani culture and his American love.
I really thought I would get disowned by my parents because that is the narrative that you're sort of raised with.
Their story and the latest on the Senate healthcare bill this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about the new Wonder Woman film, some of the controversy surrounding it, and the role of women on stage and on screen in general, how that's changing, how it may be a response to the current political climate. In studio with me today, Abby DeVeist is a local librarian, comedian, and actor joining us. And Michelle Finn is the deputy historian for the city of Rochester, also a Wonder Woman scholar. Jackie McGriff is the administrative assistant for development here at WXXI, who came downstairs to talk about being a film buff and Wonder Woman and all that fun stuff. Adam Lubiteau is a film critic for City Newspaper. Thanks for coming in. And joining us on the line now is Alexis Scott Flaherty, director of the upcoming production of Twelfth Night at Blackfriars Theater. Hi, Alexa.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thanks so much for calling in. This production fits so well into this conversation because, if you haven't heard, it's an all-female cast. Tell us a little bit about that, Alexa.
Well, Danny Hoskins, who's the artistic director of Blackfriars, was really wanting to highlight female artists in his season. And he approached me about the idea of doing Twelfth Night, a Shakespeare play, with an all-female cast. And I said yes.
Mm-hmm. In full disclosure, Abby is actually cast in that production.
I am.
Which role do you play, Abby?
I'm playing Fabian. It's going to be awesome. I got to tell you, the audition process was one of the coolest things I've ever done, because you go into usually a script and you're like, am I going to be young enough for this part, for the female part? Am I going to be pretty enough or thin enough for this one female role in this show? And it was the first time I've ever auditioned for something where I could be like, I could be anything. So I just got to be the best me that I can be. And it was totally awesome. And there was like almost 50 women there. Wow. And it was just so cool.
Alexa, is between you and Danny, was this a decision that was made as a result of the current political climate, or was this something that was in the works for a while?
I think both would be the best answer for that. I think that we live in a community where we have amazing female artists, and I know that it was on Danny's mind, and he's also been getting a lot of feedback from women in our community that they really want to have juicy, good roles to play. Mm-hmm. And I think at the same time, everything is influenced by what's happening politically at this time. So I think it was the right time to do it.
I'm thinking back to Wonder Woman. When the film was released, there was a theater in Texas that held a few female-only screenings. Mm-hmm. And that caused some uproar. Some men said, why are you discriminating against us? I don't mean to look at Adam, but he's rolling his eyes. Yeah. But men were upset. They said, this is discriminatory. You're not doing anything to help break down barriers. Do you think the same argument, and I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with it, but do you think the same argument could be made for having an all-female cast, Alexa?
Well, interestingly enough, many people probably already know this, but at the time that Shakespeare would have been performing his plays, he would have been using all male casts. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was that at the time women were not allowed to perform on the stage. But what it created was a world in which audiences accepted the talents of the actors in front of them and entered this world where they believed what was being presented. So they weren't commenting so much on being women as that they were being women. And then, of course, an audience watching it would have their own reaction, which would, in a fun way, play with the fact that it would be a male playing a female, sometimes playing a male as well with the gender bending. And so what is really interesting and exciting about this is the idea that we're sort of doing the same thing, except for that it's all women, which is something interesting in our time. So we're doing something Shakespeare did, just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. When can people see the production, Alexa?
It's playing September 1st through 23rd at Blackfriars Theater. And that's also during the time of the Fringe Festival, so the schedule alternates with some Fringe performances.
Very good. And you can learn more at the Blackfriars website?
Yep, blackfriars.org. And the tickets go on sale August 1st, and the whole season tickets are on sale now.
Mm-hmm. Abby, what are you most looking forward to when it comes to the play?
Feeling a different type of community. Usually when you're in the theater, you get really close with the cast that you're with at any given time. I think it's going to be a completely different experience having just a whole wonderful group of women, all different ages, all different experiences, going through it together. I mean, like I said, already with the audition, it was a very supportive community, very everybody was helping each other out. One woman offered someone her glasses when she couldn't read her script.
That was one of my favorite moments.
I know.
That was great.
It was totally awesome. So I'm expecting to have that kind of experience where it's just a totally different kind of support.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about women-only casts in general. So let's talk about Ghostbusters. How many of you saw Ghostbusters?
Yep.
You didn't see it, Jackie?
I didn't.
Jackie, what's going on with you?
I did not want to see it, actually.
Oh, you didn't? Why not?
Yes.
Because it was all women?
No. Which would be weird. But anyway.
I have to ask these questions.
Oh, no, that's fine. The reason why I didn't want to see it is because I would want to see something original. Like, I grew up watching the Ghostbusters movie, and I totally enjoyed them. They were fun and everything. And I, at that age, like, I wasn't really thinking about, you know, it being, like, this mostly male cast, you know, and there's one female. And when I had heard that they were making a Ghostbusters film with an all-female cast, at first I was like, okay. And then the more and more I thought about it, I was like, but wait, hold on. Like, we're basically, like, taking this story that was already made, and instead of just thinking of an entirely new movie, entirely different film, we decided to just go off of this idea that was already out there, but then making it like an all-female cast. And just not like, I've always been just sort of kind of I've gone back and forth between just like, well, you know, like, it's, you know, it's bringing about a point, you know, about there not being enough females in, like, just in front of the camera and everything, and being the main characters. But then on the other side of it too, I was like, why not just make an original film, like, with an all-female cast? Just make an original film, because that, like, I've just, like, gotten sick of, which I'm sure a lot of people have gotten sick of, is just, like, taking a story that was already good and then, like, remaking it, or, you know, rebranding it and stuff like that. And, like, for instance, there were a lot of comparisons between, like, James Bond and Jason Bourne and all that to the movie Salt, featuring Angelina Jolie. And I was like, but yeah, but it was still, it was still, like, I guess you can make comparisons, but at the same time, it was its own story. It had its own feel. It had its own drive. And so I was like, okay, so if you wanted to make, why not just have an all-female cast and just make a completely different story, but it be original? Mm. So that was my problem, and that's why I didn't watch it.
Adam, I know you saw it.
Yes.
What did you think about all the hype surrounding an all-female cast?
Well, the hype specifically about the casting I thought was kind of ridiculous. And yeah, I don't disagree with anything Jackie is saying, but I also feel like that's kind of what Hollywood is doing. That's, they're remaking things and sort of using ideas that they know already work. And so for me, you know, the casting of all of the females in the Ghostbusters role added something that made it different and made it worthwhile, because, as we said, you know, representation matters. And similarly to all the women who talked about seeing, you know, Wonder Woman, and, you know, feeling that sort of they were seeing themselves on screen, I saw so many posts the same thing about Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. And I thought that alone sort of gave it a reason for existing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's in general, I would agree with the whole remakes. We don't need another Karate Kid. It was great the way it was.
Right. Yeah.
But I think with things like the Ghostbusters movie and Annie as well, I would say this about, is that remaking them and putting such, in my mind, a significant twist on the original allows you to kind of compare and examine the sort of how you're reading the film and how does it change when you take Annie and you make her black instead of white, or these Ghostbusters are female instead of male. And sort of having that juxtaposition of the two allows you to sort of see differences that lead you to examine it in a way that you can't necessarily get that same perspective on just the one film standing on its own. So
sure. But there's also, I mean, if you take something that's purely original, like Hamilton, and you cast this diverse group of people, yeah, that's what, like, seeing, like, George Washington is a black man. Like, that to me was just the most brilliant move, because you're now, like, you're casting people based on what they can bring to the table and their gifts and talents and everything. And so that's all you're looking at. Like, because, okay, we're going to bring in this cast and it's going to be all diverse. So, like, I'm not going to make, like, I'm, George Washington doesn't have to be white. He can be anybody, you know. It all represents, like, what this country was founded on. And so the only thing when you're going into those auditions that you're looking at is merit and not someone's skin color or anything like that. So that's kind of where I'm getting it, as far as, like, and because I understand your point too, but at the same time I'm like, can we please just make something original that, you know, and all you could put, like, an all-female cast, which is why I was really excited for the Wonder Woman film coming out, because at some point, like, during the trailer, you see this just group of women who are riding on horseback together in this, like, formation, and it's, that's something I've never seen before. Like, you see that in all these war stories and everything that are, you know, set as period pieces, and you see that with males, but to have just all females, that's something I don't remember ever seeing in a film recently, and or even from, like, back then. So that was really refreshing.
Yeah, for me, for in terms of Ghostbusters at least, my issue with that, although I did enjoy the movie when I was watching it, the issue with, because I just loved the original Ghostbusters, mm-hmm, but the issue for that for me is the women were caricatures of human beings. They were smart, but they were weird. And it's like, what, we can't have strong women who fight ghosts who are not weird? I mean, I know, I just said that, it sounded weird. But you've got, like, you've got these people who are doing such ridiculous things that you're like, no normal person would do this ever. And then you've got, like, Jurassic World, where the woman's running around in high heels, and you're like,
oh, man.
But not only that, she's a strong person, but she's also, like, the ice queen, you know, the typical, oh, you're a strong woman, you're an ice queen, you just have, you don't want a family, you clearly don't want the things that every other woman wants, that's what makes you unique. And I felt like Wonder Woman didn't do that. And I thought that's why I really appreciated her. Her character was, like, very focused. And yeah, she was talking about Greek gods, she's talking about Ares, but she was very, very real about it. And there was never a moment where I was like, this girl's not a real thing, you know? So I appreciated that.
That's such an interesting point. Alexa, when you're directing shows and coaching actors, how do you keep someone from crossing the line of exploring an archetype to becoming a caricature?
One thing that we already talked about a lot in the auditions was how we were going to be men. Are we changing the characters into women, or are they men and women are performing them? And one of the things that felt important to me and to the whole team, and definitely to the actors, was that we are portraying human beings, and part of their humanness in some of the characters is that they are men and they are going to play them as men. But we're not commenting on that. We want to do it in a way where they're exploring certain aspects that they have to bring out in themselves or bring into themselves based on how a man might behave that might be different than something they might do. So we want to explore it in a way that's just one piece of that person's humanity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Abby, did you want to jump in? You've done a lot of theater locally. Mm-hmm. How does that process work for you?
Usually, you know, when you're looking at a character, you have to find the unique aspects that you can, one, relate with first, so that you can give it truth. Because I always try to bring truth to a character, no matter if it's a comedy or whatever. And you then expand upon your own connections to find this new piece of yourself. So it's not only just creating this character that's like you. It's creating yourself to be like that character. And I think that that process is one of the most challenging parts of acting, but also one of my favorite parts, and why I love doing Shakespeare, because it's just so out of my normal life that I just have to really stretch myself to do it. So, like, when I get cast in a lot of comedic roles because that is my wheelhouse, but when I get a part that is not comedic, I'm, like, so ready to go. It's going to be a long process, and I'm going to hate a lot of it, and I'm going to, like, sit at home and just, like, doubt myself the whole time. But by the end, I just feel like I've been stretched so much as a person and an actress afterwards that it's totally worth it.
I think one of the things that's interesting, too, about... you know, Shakespeare represents something for a lot of us in our culture. You know, he's this humanist writer that we go back to, that we perform his plays over and over again. And yet very few of his characters, a lot of very important ones, but very few of them are women specifically. When you look at the whole play, it's usually three or four characters at most. And so giving a group of strong female actresses the chance to play all of the roles allows them to be a part of this humanist tradition we have in a larger way.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Wonder Woman and the roles of women on stage and screen. Listeners, there's still time to call in if you want to share your thoughts. 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'd like to ask a question that's been burning on my mind for a while. If you all remember a few months ago when, let's see, it was an SNL debate over should all the women in SNL play members of the Trump administration. So Melissa McCarthy was guest starring playing Sean Spicer. Kate McKinnon was playing Jeff Sessions. And there was a call for all the female cast members to take on a role of someone in the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. It never played out. But what did you think about that question and how it would reflect upon either the cast or what we say about women in on television in general? Adam, I'll let you kick things off as the man in the room.
You know, I got why it happened because, you know, Melissa McCarthy showed up and was so great as Sean Spicer.
Awesome.
But at the same time, you know, you have to take that, you know, the idea of casting women as all these men was also sort of meant to, like, poke fun at them, like making them women was sort of an insult to them. And so that's when you get into that territory, I feel like that's getting into, you know, some issues that you don't want to get into. And I think that, yeah, there was a little bit of that. And I think that's why it, you know, didn't end up happening when people kind of realized that.
I don't know, though, I could see them wanting to get into it. It's so ironic, like this all male administration. Mm-hmm. We, you know, mm-hmm. again, with that, the Ghostbusters thing, like, here's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's parody, so it is making fun of them. But, you know, what is so different about these two pictures we're presenting you, and mm-hmm. why is there such a stark contrast between them? I think it raises interesting questions.
I think one of the root of the issues, though, is the fact that having a woman play you is an insult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, why? That's... Some of the best, strongest people, especially in our government currently, Elizabeth Warren, is strong women, you know? So you should take that as a compliment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been thinking about that question. Like, I think back to the picture of all these males deciding, like, our health care.
Yes.
Like, it was just such, like, a hard-hitting image just to see, like, people who are being most affected by this are women, and it's something that's being decided by an all-male administration, to which, like, having women portray the administration is just kind of like we're kicking it back in your court. Like, it's like this thing, like, no, like, we're not going to let this affect us. We're going to fight for, you know, what we want and our rights, you know, as women. And I mean, again, I know it's parody, but at the same time, it says so much for them to be playing all these male roles. And I know there was something out there about, like, Rosie O'Donnell possibly playing or needing to play
Bannon.
And I was like, please, yes, please. Awesome. Like, that needs to happen. I still want that to happen.
Jackie's putting a call out, so Rosie O'Donnell's listening.
Alexa? I also think as we work toward representation on stage and film and TV, we are inevitably going to go through a series of those kind of questions in the sort of negative, like, is this bad because it's a woman? Is it an insult? Is it, you know, there's no way to move into a world where we're used to seeing women or used to seeing women play men or used to seeing different types of people without asking those questions that go against what we're used to seeing. But I think that's a good thing. I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about that and then back to Wonder Woman, this is something Adam and I talked about over email last night, is was the film made or was this SNL debate started as a result of cultural pressure? So let's just start by talking about Wonder Woman. Do you think having made that film at this time was a result of that?
You know, as I was saying to you, I do think there was some pressure, because, I mean, we're getting so many superhero movies. It's sort of a few, you know, every year there are, you know, at least a dozen. And the fact that there have been so few starring female superheroes, people were, you know, starting to get frustrated and being vocal about that frustration. And added to that, you know, Wonder Woman being one of the most iconic comic book superheroes ever all around the world, and the fact that there had never been a live-action movie about that. So I think that kind of pressure did help. But again, as I said to you, it is Wonder Woman, and at some point, somebody was going to make a movie about her. Going to happen.
Didn't the conversation about that start back in like 2005?
I think earlier than that.
Yeah, and Joss Whedon had written a script at one point.
Yes.
And they denied it. Warner Brothers shot it down.
As they shoot down all his stuff, like, seriously. Yeah, Firefly.
I think about then and there, I wasn't interested.
Did you guys read that script? Because it was released recently.
Yeah. I didn't.
It was not great.
Oh.
Joss Whedon. I'm a big fan, but that script was not very good. It's probably best they didn't do it.
Oh, well, fair enough.
I remember someone, well, there were articles about, or maybe just comments, or both, about, like, Black Widow being a couple of the Avengers and Marvel films, and she still hasn't had her sort of, like, single movie made, and then, like, there was talks of Captain Marvel and all this, but they haven't got, they never got that off the ground, or there hasn't been any more developments about it. And so Wonder Woman comes out and it's like, yes, finally. But I mean, seeing as how, like, it's taken so long, like, there have been movies come out, there have been remakes of the remakes, like, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, looking at you. And like, all of these movies made, and it's like centered around men, and you're like, well, there's a lot of female superheroes out there too. And I mean, it's great that we've got Wonder Woman, but I think, I mean, in the fact that it's, like, by a female director, it's written by a female, like, all these different things, it's amazing. But again, like, I would love to see more of these kinds of films come out.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last couple of minutes. I want to try to squeeze in one more phone call. This is Andrea in Rochester. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I am calling from RIT. I'm actually a student of the program for film and animation, and mm-hmm. I went to see Wonder Woman with a bunch of my film classmates who are all female, and we really, really loved it, like, for obvious reasons, because of her, like, strength as a character and, like, the directorial roles, Patty Jenkins and everything. But one thing that we all kind of agreed on was the one scene where she's at no man's land and is kind of arguing with Chris Pine, and he's telling her, like, no, you can't do this because it's just the way it is. And we all kind of, like, agreed. We really liked that his role, he was saying these things like, you can't do this because it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, well, no, it's not the way it is. I'm going to tell you why. And not only that, she does it, and then a bunch of the men, the soldiers, in the end, like, rally around her. And mm-hmm. I think that's what made her, in my eyes, even a stronger character, is that she is able to get people, everybody, to rally around her as, like, this strong character.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much, Andrea, for calling in. There were a few times that happened in the film where the Steve Trevor character would say, you can't do this, it's just the way it is, and she would blow right past him. Mm-hmm. So
I think that scene in particular, though, was a real turning point, because all up to that point, you see the men in this world trying to protect her in some way, dress her the right way so people aren't looking at her, you know, hold the guns in front of her so she doesn't get hurt. And she goes out into that field and there's like thousands of bullets getting shot at her and they're all like, oh, okay, let's let her protect us for a bit, you know? And then from then on, you go into that, the whole scene in the city and they're all just like, she's like, I'll go ahead. And they're like, all right,
okay,
you do you, Diana. We're gonna try to survive this. And she's just smashing everything with her big shield, and it's just the coolest thing ever. So I think she breaks something with her butt at one point. And you're just like, yeah.
Down to our last 2 minutes, I just want to go around the table one more time and on the phone and ask you all what either if you have seen the film, what your major takeaway was, and for those that haven't, what you hope that you'll see from the film. Alexa, we'll start with you. I know you haven't seen it yet, but you're the mother of two young girls. What do you hope you'll see in the film?
I really, just from talking to people too, I do know that it's in the film. I love seeing a strong woman who also, part of her strength includes her compassionate nature, which I think is a strength of women in general. And I like the combination of those two things, and I want my children to be able to see those strong, whole women.
Mm-hmm. Adam, 15 seconds.
I think, I hope it's the start of, you know, a momentum building of female-centered films. You know, Hollywood is easy to fall back into old habits, and I feel like, you know, keep more coming, and that's the start of something. And not the end of the conversation.
I lied, guys. We're sort of out of time. I wish I could go around everybody. But thanks to Abby DeVice, Michelle Finn, Jackie McGriff, Adam Lubiteau, and Alexa Scott Flaherty for all their thoughts today. Thank you, listeners, for calling in and sharing yours. We'll take a short break. More Connections next.